Emta Jauzak Yama. Written by Silent Walrus. Read by Opal Song. Fandom, Full Metal Alchemist. Rating, teen. Relationship, Ed Roy. Also tagged for introspection. Or lack thereof. You're doing great, Roy. Part 11 of Caveat Emptor.
It's not like I need you. I need to be around you. It's not like I'd die if there's a time when I'm without you. It's not like I care that much. Not like I need this that bad. It's nothing that deep. It's not like that. But every time you walk away, walk away, walk away, a little piece of my heart breaks. It breaks, it breaks. And anytime you walk away, walk away, walk away, you take a piece of my heart with you. You take a piece of my heart.
Ed gets quite entertainingly worked up about the mob thing, which Roy supposes he should, at some point, read Ed in on, given his ongoing and somewhat surprisingly committed involvement to Roy's, affairs. Though Roy really shouldn't be surprised, in retrospect. The communications director continues to pen dire warnings about Ed, but they simply don't know him. Ed only looks about as dependable as a candy floss umbrella. The downside is that Mace has taken it as some kind of cosmic sign that Roy's actually going to date again, in the near future even, and has ramped up his annoyances accordingly. Roy isn't interested in the pity party inherent to explaining to Mace that he's got less than no interest in grinding through a series of rote intimacies of no actual substance, with a final culmination in the kind of marriage that produces the more sociopathic of their yearmates back at boarding school. But it's not like Mace would stop, even if he did. So he just keeps making Morizet take his calls and let it do duty as professional hardening for the lieutenant. In the meantime, Ed's already proven himself the right choice twice over. Though having one of the proving incidents involve Roy spewing his guts out under a tree is a quiet mortification he will just have to pretend never happened. Roy's less pleased by Halcrow's decision-making. He's almost tempted to do something idiotic himself in return, but that's not a new feeling. With Ed on his arm, Roy's had to contend with the urge to laugh maniacally in people's faces more than once, and so far only barely been successful. Roy's long been aware of Ed's theatrical streak, but it's lit a gleeful third-grade treehouse sort of feeling in him to see Ed playing a blonde con with such aplomb, all while digging his fingers into Roy's arm or side or collar as if to remind Roy of the truth, the secret they're in on together. Ed is easy to touch. Sturdy and warm and solid. And each time he allows it, Roy feels that base little thrill like petting a dog that bites everyone, like knowing a secret about everyone in the room. The smart thing to do when you get won over on people is not to brag about it, however. And Ed was right that if Roy doesn't handle this appropriately, quite a few very important people will feel like they've been made fools of. Halcrow, though. He might need some personal attention if he's cornering Ed in bushes to rave at him about conspiracy theories that incidentally just happened to be true. Halcrow's already a nexus for problems to coagulate around. Old guard, patriot, hates Roy with a passion that's as deep as it is discreet, which makes for a smarter and more sophisticated threat. The fact that he is a patriot protects Roy, but only until the point that Halcrow convinces himself that Roy is a danger to the Amstrian institution itself, which isn't going to be that long a rope given he's 2 for 2 on recognizing concealed truths so far. But in the meantime, Ed started getting invited to the more social poker games and squash tournaments, as Roy's apparent investment is taken more and more seriously. And it's only a matter of time before he starts getting invited to the various spousal shopping trips and badminton parties, which he may or may not decide to attend. Roy's quite pleased with himself for choosing Ed for this, honestly. He's too young for the older husbands and wives to boggart him readily, and those with children Ed's age are keeping them well away, lest Roy's eye turn to one of them instead, which in turn keeps Ed from having to put undue effort into the charade. Roy can tell that it's starting to chafe, however, that as gleeful as Ed was with Soffler, he's doing a lot less performing and a lot more biting his tongue now. It's probably too early to call his reclaiming Full Metal an inevitability, but it's plain to see that Ed's time living in the background is on a countdown. And it's partially why Roy can't quite resist pulling Ed's tail, reassuring him expansively that it's quite all right that he doesn't know what the little three-toed symbols on some of the cards are. They're in Magister Roland's card room, the two of them with their chairs clustered together under the pretense of Roy teaching Ed how to play. The kid grew up in rural inns and public trains. Roy doesn't believe for a second that Ed's unfamiliar with a single card game in this hemisphere. Not the least because Ed's jabbed his ankle with his automail toes twice when Roy was about to play an onion. And it's the first time Roy can remember enjoying himself anywhere in the vicinity of Roland, whose opinions, both private and public, on various policies, programs, social classes, and ethnic groups, entitle him to some truly amazing social punishment that surely can't have been invented yet. Ed seems to be more or less pleased as well, though that's probably because he's enjoying developing a system of pinches to control what cards Roy plays, like a particularly vindictive puppet master. He's completely given up playing his own hand, putting cards down more or less at random in favor of playing Roy. He makes a show of disappointment upon losing the round, of course, grumbling as he drags one of his necklaces off to put in the pot, as if he can't make 30 more any time he likes, probably between REM cycles. His collar gaps as he leans forward to toss the gold chain in, revealing the pale, raveled line of the scar on his collarbone. But it's no matter. For anyone to see it, they'd have to be in Roy's position. Roy's abruptly struck by... It must have been during their review of the Bradley papers. A memory of Ed, his hair up and his collar gapped just like this, and Roy had caught a glimpse of a scattering of dark marks down his neck, an odd constellation that hadn't made sense for long seconds. He'd shaken his head at himself at how long it took him to recognize hickeys, lifted a vague mental toast to Miss Rockabell, called himself old, and gotten back to his portion of the stack. But that was before the revelation of the lemming-like nature of Ed's love life. And it is not at all what he finds himself thinking now, which is how long it might take to get a mark to show on that neck, who it might have been that Ed let them. Roy looks away. Ed may have turned out to be surprisingly accommodating as a co-conspirator, but he didn't sign on for this. It's the same wrong note that edged the unexpected bloom of heat when Roy came across him and Riza at the gym, tied up in each other. The discomfort of uninvited regard. Roy knows it's involuntary and automatic, understandable and benign, but it's still not helpful to think of them in that way, to feel that his friends are attractive rather than simply know it. Unfortunately, Mace is not, in fact, wrong about lack of partnership having consequences. Roy grew up in a life funded by all the things loneliness drives people to do, and it's been a long time since that summer Ev was living in Central between projects. He's also used to addressing this particular issue, however. It's easy enough to book a massage, pester Riza, let Mace pester him in return. He sets the thought of Ed's throat away, replacing it with the practical matter of the shirt instead. His summer clothes are decent enough, but Roy's seen this particular green shirt thrice now, and while it sits well on him, Ed could definitely use a little more variety. He doubts Ed will let him shop for him outright, but maybe not if Roy presents it right. Ed's tastes run towards the dramatic, and while incidentally quite charming, Roy's starting to find that this browned wardrobe feels mismatched, like a draft ox yoke on a war charger, frayed bandanas on a prize wolfhound. Ed might appreciate looking a little more like himself. Roy returns his attention to the cards. He's used to feeling satisfied when he looks at Ed. The pleasure of having made the right call, bet on the right horse. It's odd to look at him now and feel unsatisfied instead. It's not a sensation he wants to last. Well, one way or another, this iteration of their relationship will end, and the matter won't come into question, beyond its place in the broader trajectory of Roy's life. Mace is also correct that dying alone is not the smartest strategic move either. Roy doubts that he'll become any more enthusiastic about addressing the matter, but either way, it's irrelevant now. Maybe Ev will move back to Central again. Roy will find something of it to look forward to, one way or another. The end.
But every time you walk away, walk away, walk away, a little piece of my heart breaks, it breaks, it breaks. And every time you walk away, walk away, walk away, take a piece of my heart with you, take a piece of my heart. Take a piece of my heart with you.
If you enjoyed this podfic, you could leave feedback, both for myself and for the author. You can find this podfic at archiveofourown.org/users/opalsong. And from there, you can find a link to the podfic post, and from there, you can find a link to the text post. The music used in this podfic is Every Time You Walk Away by D.A. Wallace.